I was fucked up. I'd been fucked up, and I felt fucked up. I crossed the concrete apron of the Thompson Basketball Manufactory like water on a skillet, wincing and hopping as best I could, shaking off jewels of broken glass. I'll think about this later, I thought. I needed to move. I drove, leaning forward, my chest almost against the steering wheel, scanning the featureless industrial backstreets for, I don't know what, snipers or anarchists. Chupacabras. I smelled like a drag strip, and I could feel myself enlarging, like someone was moving my scale slider as my entire body inflamed itself in response to being blown out of a window, burnt, hurled, and scraped raw. I stopped next to an empty parking lot and put the car in neutral. The tires scraped the curb as the car rolled back a few feet, and I beheld myself in the vanity mirror. I looked like Pigpen. One eyelid was flipped completely inside out. I left it. I took a deep breath and coughed a Stidler eraser onto the dashboard. I held it and thought, it must have come from that guy's office, the European guy. I forgot his name. He told me something. I forgot it. I was missing a shoe. Put the eraser in the ashtray and looked out into the vast gray of the lot beside me, and my head was ringing like an empty bell. Maybe I should quit, I thought. Maybe I should see if I could become a plumber's apprentice. They might think it was neat having an old guy as an apprentice. I could explain that I'd made some mistakes. I would tell them that the things I thought I'd wanted I hadn't got, and it turned out that I didn't want them anyways. But now I wanted to solder copper pipe and talk about women's asses in a van. I could lie down on the sidewalk like the guy in the Radiohead video and just see what happened. I would either die or someone would move me somewhere and give me juice and listen to my complaints. Movement out my window snapped my head up and broke the string of drool that connected my mouth to the gear shift knob. A flutter of wings and then a settling. I saw a black and white bird, and it saw me, turning its head this way and that. It had the largest human penis that I have ever seen hanging off of it. It lolled like a tired dancer over the rim of the tire it had perched on. It seemed to be talking to me, so I rolled down the window.
Eyeballing my big human type penis.
Why lie, I thought.
Yeah.
I'm Mike Collingwood, and you're listening to Who Killed Jeff Boot.
You mind if I sit?
Of course not. Not at all. How about, over yonder?
Here?
Yeah, so we can sit both looking in the same direction. See, me? I have monocular vision. I can't really look forward. It's easier to... Yeah. There.
Whew. What a day. What a ding-dong day.
Rough one?
A bit. You?
Same as any other, best I can figure it. Sun is in the sky somewhere, and I am the same as I ever was or ever will be, though one day older.
I hear you. I got blown up. I got blown up.
Yeah?
I mean, not really. I got blown out of a window. I almost died a bit before that.
That is a rough one.
Yeah, I don't really want to talk about it.
You can ask me about it if you like.
Hmm?
I'm just saying.
I don't know.
It's okay. I'm a bird, and I have a really big human penis.
I don't know, man.
It's just hanging there. We don't have to talk about it. I just been around long enough to know most people usually want to talk about it.
Do you want to talk about it?
What wants? I may possess our arcane. Obscure even to me, and as they used to say, beyond my ken.
Oh, cool. Is it, Did you get circumcised? How did that work?
I guess so. I don't remember it happening, but apparently, yeah. To me, it's always just been like that. Funny, I suppose.
It seems like you want to talk about it.
Well, I guess I must. Does that make it weirder or less weird?
A little weirder. Maybe. Do you have balls?
Yeah, you know. Anyway, whatever. What's going on with you?
I don't know, man. Have you heard of a guy named Jeff Boot?
Yeah, Dad?
Yeah, you knew him?
I know the names of all things, plain and hidden. I know the secret names of things never spoken.
That's wild. It
is wild, yeah. Go on, you were saying.
Jeff Boot, right? Like, he was this dude that... He died, like you said, and nobody seemed to care. Which, that sucks, right? He was like... at the bottom of this big culvert, dead, and everybody just kind of was like, whatever, he fell. He was just messing around, doing culvert stuff, and fell. It was normal. It's not suspicious.
And that didn't sit right with you.
Well, no.
You don't think he fell doing culvert stuff?
No, I think he was pushed.
Why?
Why do I think he was pushed, or why was he pushed, or why do I care?
Either. Any. Whichever.
That's what I'm trying to find out. I'm making a podcast about it, you know. Who killed him? Why? I don't know. It's something to do. I don't have much else going on.
That's why you got your little voice recorder doohickey there.
Yeah, I'm recording now. Hope that's okay.
Well, of course I don't mind, but you think there's going to be anything on it when you listen back to it?
I mean, whatever. It's not a big deal. Either way, if there's not, I'll just do a, you know, like
a reenactment.
Exactly.
Cool. Thin blue line, the thing.
Yeah, if I have to. I mean, I have some clues. A few. I had some clues.
Well, that's great. What are they?
Well, my basketball blew up, and I felt like I definitely got a clue from the woman at the store there. It was for sure a clue. And then I ended up at this basketball factory, and it just got all fucked up. It was crazy.
I bet.
And now it's just like, in my head, it's basically like humming.
Sounds like you got yourself a bad case of having confronted the voids. The heebie-jeebies. The yips. That sucks.
I guess it's just, okay, I wanted to, like, I can't help Jeff Boot, right?
Nope. For an eternity, fella was not. Then, for an eye blink, fella was. And now, for another eternity more, fella shall not be.
Yeah, I just thought it was such a sad thing to me, thinking about him alone, and what's sadder than that, right? And, you know, like, if you're sad and you want to talk about how you're sad because you have to... I'm Mike, by the way.
I'm Laplace. Pleasure.
So you have all this stuff, right? Like, stuff filling you up, and you feel like, oh, fuck, it's going to start, you know, tipping out. But how do you make that sadness, like... interesting. That's the deal, right? How do you make your sadness something someone else would want to hear?
That I do not know. I know the location of all lost things, but the hows and whys, the what ifs, the why didn't they's, all that horse shit, not my business. Hidden from me, that shit be, like the moon's ass, figuratively.
Yeah, I get it. I just thought that, you know, kind of sadness would be interesting for people to listen to if it was... about like a murder. Does that make sense?
One could assume so, but one could probably assume all human sadness is interesting when considering the paces and volumes at which you all work to produce it. I'll tell you one thing, though. Being sad sounds fucking stupid, and you sound fucking stupid. Though I am aware of my privileged position as suffering from a directly complete case of not giving a shititis.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, that was my thinking. Now I'm stuck. There's something about a photographer. Is my eyelid still flipped up?
Yeah.
That kind of day.
Yeah, I wouldn't flip it down. You currently have about 1,200 species of bacteria on your hand.
Is that a lot?
It's more than average, for sure. And some of them really only normally occur, you know, inside the human body.
That kind of day.
In the shitter tube, generally.
Okay, I remember after my ball exploded, I definitely had a clue. A lead. That's interesting, right? So I went to the basketball manufacturer, and this guy, this, like, Hungarian or a Latvian, like, freedom guy, I can't remember his name.
Bert Hospodar.
Right. Exactly. Wait. Right. Anyway, he told me to find a photographer.
Portland.
Portland. Right. He had a weird accent. I don't know if Portland is a name or a place, I guess. It was really dramatic.
I know 76,000 photographers named Portland in, you know, one way or another. Middle name and such.
Yeah. So I guess not, you know, a lot to go on.
Fuck. Well, it's something.
Yeah, everything's something.
About that, you are correct. If I sit back and open my eyes wide enough, I can see a connection reaching back through time immeasurable between an atom in the cell membrane of a turd bacteria on your hand and one in the cloud matter mind of a Hutari AI named Victorious Pony Wrestler orbiting a star your people haven't even cataloged yet. Everything is something indeed. You just gotta look at it right.
Yeah.
May I ask you a question?
Sure, shoot.
I am a magpie. I am a bird.
Yep.
And I have a human penis and balls.
Yeah, I don't want to be rude, but that was basically the first thing I noticed about you.
And it's big, right? It's nice. Not just for a bird. If this penis was on you, you'd think, wow.
Yeah, if I had your penis, I would love it. It's really big.
And this vein on top. That vein's nice?
Yeah, it is. It looks strong. It's a great vein on there. It's a really, really nice penis.
Right, exactly. So my question is, I have never used this penis. Is that sad? If it is sad, would it be more or less sad if this penis was small or strange looking?
Never use it?
No, never. It just hangs there. I scrape it often on wires, or when I alight on the back of an Adirondack chair, it slaps into the wood and is painful. When I sleep, ants bite it. Once, a ballgame player from the Plains Ojibwe smacked the shit out of it with a lacrosse stick.
I scraped my penis really bad today. It sucks.
Yes, it does. I wonder, if I perceive things as you do, through your scream of emotions, would I regret having a nice, big penis? Because I've never used it? Would I perceive myself as pitiable?
What do you mean?
Would how I feel about myself change, depending on whether or not I've used this penis? And does its niceness and size factor into that consideration?
I think probably, yeah. I mean, definitely, that's the kind of thing people would have sad feelings about. It'd be like a missed opportunity type deal. Regret, for sure.
But how would having used my penis in the past affect my life now? Accepting the obvious, you know, having a child or a partner or some such. If I had neither, but I had put this thing to good use, and I end up here with you just the same, why feel different? It don't add square to me, but I'm limited.
Well, it wouldn't be like I should have flown to that big pine near Walmart and boned down with Carla the hot bird. It's like vaguer than that. It's like, oh, I wish I'd done something different. I wish things were different. I wish that never happened, etc.
So pointless and kind of, I'm not good with subjective descriptors, but whiny? Just an, ooh, I am but a forlorn bepenis bird, bereft of a joy I cannot name, but nonetheless feel a claim to, despite having done nothing to manufacture it through effort or focus.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a kind of a mean way to describe it, but that's the theoretical situation.
It is?
Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you.
Sure. So, like, sure. So, like, you never use it. It's like a Porsche with no miles on it.
It's true. I can make it erect. Watch. Come on, baby. Get after it. Come on. Come on. You can do it. Get after it.
Hey, that's great.
But I am the only magpie on Earth with human genitalia. The rest of the birds in the world have cloacas. You know what a cloaca is?
I think so. It's kind of like a hole?
Exactly right. It's a hole. All bird excreta, your piss, your shit, jizz, eggs, what have you, all of it goes out through the hole. And how birds have sex, instead of the penis going in somewhere, they don't have a penis, they each have a hole, and they rub holes together. Except for ducks, and between you and me, fuck ducks.
That's very interesting. Like kissing, I guess. I mean, I wonder why more birds don't, I guess, I mean, like, why birds, all birds, boy birds, don't have penises. Why'd everything else evolve a penis except for birds?
I'm not sure. I know the angular momentum and position of every extant particle, but I do not know that.
Probably because if you're up there, you know, bird fucking. Sorry, I just remembered something. They were bird fucking.
You were saying?
Yeah. If a bird with a penis was having sex in the air with a bird that had a vagina, maybe it's hard. Sorry, difficult. Aerodynamically, the boy bird and the girl bird are, like, connected. Whereas with holes, if you just, you know, rub holes, there's no, you know, connection is the wrong word, because I'm sure birds feel a connection when they have sex, but, like, penetration, I guess. The holes are touching, but one hole doesn't, you know,
go in the other hole, topologically, so the birds don't crash, right? Two rubbing together donuts. Throne will diverge, is, I guess, what I'm saying.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. But birds only have sex on the ground. The only creatures that have sex in the air are humans.
Yeah, with Earl Thompson's wife.
You know about that?
People having, like, bird sex? Which is, I guess, a weird wrong name.
Considering that birds have sex on the ground by rubbing donuts.
Yes. Except for ducks.
Which?
Fuck ducks.
Correct. I know about Earl Thompson's wife. I know the name of the company that created the videotape as well.
You suppose that has to do with the photographer that Hospodar was talking about? With the clue? There? Maybe he meant videographer.
I couldn't say. I know all words uttered, but I do not...
You don't know what they mean.
That's right.
Did you start, you know, talking about your bird penis to help me remember? About Earl Thompson's wife and Bird Hospodar?
I couldn't say. As I have mentioned, I am aphasic when it comes to matters of motivation. Like yourself, though you're not quite at the point of admitting that yet. Though, one would think the topic of bird procreation would arise when speaking with a bird with a big old beautiful pecker such as mine, no?
I suppose. I suppose. Maybe have a penis in the first place, you know, to remind me.
It is possible, I assume. I watched the birth of the universe and have watched it spin endless since. But it is possible that I have a penis to remind you of what some guys said before they's blown up in a basketball war.
I don't know. It seems like anything is possible, but not like in a dumb way.
All things that are possible are in fact possible, yes. So, would you like me to tell you where the video company is? I could tell you what happened to Jeff Boot as well. The truth of it.
You could tell me who pushed him? If he was pushed? But you couldn't tell me why?
No, of course not.
Can I ask you something? How is it possible that you know everything? All the particles or whatever, but you don't know why things happen?
Well, look, it's like this. You and I are communicating, right? Kind of?
I believe so.
But it's all vague. It's all shades of meaning, verging on out like the dusky prairie itself into imperceptibility. You can see through the darkling that the prairie ends, a button as it does in, say, the darker even forest.
Hypothetical prairie?
Fucking, yes. And I say the prairie ends over yonder by them trees, right? And we've communicated in a sense, but what do you know about where the prairie ends other than, you know, over yonder by them trees?
Enough to go over. Anyway, I could go over and see myself and measure, record. I could get GPS coordinates.
Correct. And you could write that down, and an alien smart enough could grok your meaning. Unlike, you know, county fair, gorgeous, penis, egregious, non-use sadness, where, oh, it not so if only I issues, which can be known about conceptually, but the true depth of which, or breadth, or shade, or intensity, can never be shared one to another, save in a fucking poem or something, apparently, but I, of course, have my own doubts about that. A particle you can fix in time. Time you can fix in space. Space you can fix relative to itself, etc., etc. You cannot fix sadness to a point.
But you still know penis sadness exists, right?
Sure. So what the fuck are you talking about? You asked about why. Can I tell you a story I know, and then, having done so, illustrate my point with a rhetorical question?
Sure.
So around about a while ago, and a little ways on from here, a man flicked a lit cigarette out in the road. And before you judge him for so doing, know that he was not normally given to do such as that, but was in a deep despair, such that his normal faculties were not with him. The cigarette, still lit, landed on the back of a small tortoise, who paid it no particular attention. Despite them having counter to intuition nerves up in their shells, the tortoise felt the impact of the cigarette as only a light tap from some not important bit of detritus, though it did swerve in its slow way, lest there be coming more of said detritus. The unfathomable mind of a tortoise, combining both knowledge of its own armoring against bombardment such as this, and that animal flexibility of purpose, it ambled 12 degrees left of its original uncigaretted course, directly under the dripping and altogether flammable hulk of the man's neighbor Goofus's oleaginous and unrestored 1985 Monte Carlo SS. The man was in said despair because his beloved, Cindy Lou, had took fled of him, leaving only a note that said, Corn David, I am taking fled of you, leaving you only this note and what memories you may possess of me. You are a scoundrel of the highest order, and you do not know how to treat women. Goodbye.
P.S. You were supposed to treat women good. And so, he was alone and in the throes of sadness. Now, of course, you understand that this is a story told to me, not seen by me, hence the my surprising knowledge of the intimate details of said fella Corn David's sear and dirt-brown, rocky, interior emotional landscape. And anyway, he thought to himself, oh, woe is me, were it not so. Had I only not done such and such, and he flung cigarettes in self-directed anger and despair. And he cursed his absent father, and thought that if his absent father had been instead present, he could have learned from said father how to treat women, which he had learned only a day too late was good, and then Cindy Lou would never have gone and took fled from him as she done. Now, Corn David did not like to think of his father much, and having done it, thought immediately that no, he was best shot of his father anyhow, contradicting the first thought expressing the longing for his presence, because while his father could change car oil and split wood on the treating women front, he was, as they say, no peach, him being imprisoned, as he was, for all of Corn David's adolescence, in a secure facility for panty thieves and other irredeemable perverts. And Corn David lit another cigarette and thought about something else. What Corn David did not know was that his father, years before, beholding young Corn David just on the brink of becoming pubertized and having read in a magazine about how children learn best from observing, not being told this and that and such, and worrying about being a single father with shared custody, not successful with women beyond creating Corn David with one who quickly thereafter took fled of him, quick as a flicked cigarette, thought I can teach my son many things through him watching me and modeling my good behaviors, recycling and kindly treating local bums and such. But as there's no woman on earth willing to spend her time away with me, good treatment of said will be impossible for me to model, and he will grow up stupid in the ways of treating women. And I will pass down to him not only my knowledge of wrench turning and respect for the environment, but also my loneliness. And that Corn David's father did not want to do. So he thought, perhaps I can create a woman, a ruse, and I can model respect for this imaginary woman's imaginary ways. And Corn David will observe this and learn from it, and not absorb that a man's life is lonely to its core, but in fact grow up bathed in an atmosphere of heterosexualized harmony, respectful partnership, and good treatment. So he began to describe to his son all the good ways in which he was respecting his not extant girlfriend, the beautiful race car driver, Deborah Lee. Telling young Corn David that when Corn David was spending time in his mother's house, he was spending time respecting Deborah Lee and treating her good. Well, Corn David, he said, just yesterday I found myself respecting Deborah Lee profoundly and treating her good. I asked her about herself, and I listened to her answer all the way to the end, even though it, like all women's answers, was more boring than the talk you and I are used to as exciting men. And then I made her her favorite dinner of vegetables and maintained compassionate eye contact with her while she complained wildly, as all women do, about her nemesis at work, the dreaded pit crew boss, Janet, who was cruel to Deborah Lee from various reasons, including jealousy, idle cruelty, and being a bitch. And Corn David nodded and said, yes, sir, may I play Nintendo? Over time, the father's ruse became more and more elaborate, and he found himself after lonely matinees searching through popcorn and garbage for discarded ticket stubs that he could pair with his own and leave on the counter to be observed by Corn David, physical evidence of the existence of the woman Deborah Lee that his father was treating so good. And after many dates, he thought, well, Deborah Lee, you are an imaginary woman and I am a man. And it is time that we done what come natural. And so the father began to have sex with the imaginary woman and allude to said couplings to his son, Corn David, in a helpful way. But the father worried that it was not enough, him bragging and talking long on his good deeds and treatment, and that as successful as he was being of convincing a child of the existence of a woman the child was not particularly interested in the first place, he was sliding headlong into that parental trap of telling, not showing. It being difficult to show and model what does not and would not never exist. That being a woman that was happy to spend time in the presence of Corn David's father. Some physical token of representation was needed, and so he thought, well, I should probably come by some women's intimates to work into our laundry rotation, and in such a way demonstrate that women have underwear same as men, and washing it up for them is part of treating them good, which is what one ought to do when it come to woman. And he would thereby model for Corn David good treatment and not loneliness, the existence of a woman who could love Corn David's father being proved out in panties. But he thought, I will not, being of an environmental bent, cause to come into production any more panties than strictly need to be for the purpose of protecting women's crotches in their natural way. And so I will buy old panties, used up ones, past their usefulness to women, recycling and general caretaking of the earth being a priority for the man, besides the general good treatment of women, in theory. I will buy some used panties from a woman to demonstrate to my son the right way to treat women, which is good.
But as he clicked around on the websites where such things are trafficked, he realized, struck, that the majority of the woman panty slingers were quite young. Inappropriately so, in fact. And even though Corn David's father would not be purchasing used up panties from an inappropriately young woman for sexual purposes, but merely to model for his son a good lesson of respect, he did not want any of the young woman panty slingers to see his worn and worried old face come through, his avatar, his dour face gone gray and loose, come through on an order for 3 pairs of used up panties and think this is a sad and lonely old pervert. And even more importantly, then themselves feel that without adequately consenting, they'd become part of an age-inappropriate sexual or commercial relationship, which they would feel badly about. So, he thought, he would find a lady local to him and break into her house at night and thieve some panties in the dark. Figuring a known truth about all women was that every woman has more underwears than they can ever count, and surely some few would not go missed, and that doing so in the dark secret would be the lesserest sin possible in service of the greater good of teaching his son Corn David to treat women good, and that loneliness is not the fundament of a man's life. And in service of so doing, he summed his life knowledge of prowling, having seen many movies featuring such, and descended like a creep on a woman's domicile to relieve her of some extraneous panties, and did, in fact, do so successfully, trembling and lacking to pee himself, and was correct that the woman would not notice, she having over 60 pairs of identical-ish underwear and never even suspecting the loss at all. But the wicked fleeth where none pursueth. And as time went on, and Corn David's father sighed while folding ostentatiously Deborah Lee's roughly flag-sized undergarments, him saying, "Oh, Corn David, what am I to do with Deborah Lee's giant underwear that she left here after visiting me romantically while you were at your mother's?" While Corn David thought to himself he'd never seen a race car so big as to sit a woman with an ass so large as Deborah Lee in the pilot seat, and watched his father fold, 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 and fold again the tarp-like inch of his father's mysterious girlfriend he would never fucking shut up about, Corn David's father began to worry. And that worry gnawed at him and nipped at the edges of his sleep, which happened less and less. And more he became convinced that he had not successfully stolen 3 pairs of woman's underwear, and that he was, in fact, being surveilled by the pervert squad, perhaps waiting to strike the moment he performed his next profane act. And that worry became fear, and that fear became a constant middle-grade panic. And that panic and that guilt, one would have to suppose, and Corn David's not having the heart nor soul of a scoundrel, no true fiend he, and maybe hoping to salvage what he could, to demonstrate his moral worth despite his high crime of panty theft, and earn himself, if not leniency, then at least approving looks from the authorities. He drank one beer, and preemptively drove himself to the police and turned himself in, crying, "You have caught me, the vile panty thief, the darkness that comes in the night." And the police, them who wasn't ever even looking for him, the woman never having noticed 3 pairs of her underwear gone and hence not knowing a crime had occurred, arrested him and put him in the jail special reserve for panty thieves and perverts. And he was thus excised from Corn David's life, leaving him with no good guidance on the proper treatment of women, which is good. Hence why Cindy Lou took fled of Corn David, perceiving in him that lack. And now Corn David's neighbor is on his porch, yelling, as Corn David flicks cigarettes and rues his woes. So my rhetorical question is this: why was Goofus's car on fire?
Yep. Do you think I could find out by myself who pushed him? If I got up and just drove away and just kept trying my best and having fun, do you think I could figure it out?
I do not have the slightest idea, but probably. I seen people do all kinds of things.
Okay, that's good enough. That's good enough for me for now. As you like. Good luck with your penis, Laplace, and, you know, knowing everything.
Oh, I'm a fool, but thanks nonetheless.
My head cleared as I drove at first vaguely in the direction of home, then with more growing certainty as the city reassembled itself into something I recognized. I thought about Jeff Boot. I thought about him falling and dying, and for the first time in a very long time, it didn't make me sad, it made me angry. I thought about Laplace and about Corn David and his father. And fuck that bird. Fuck his big dick. Fuck that story. Fuck Corn David and fuck Corn David's dad. And fuck Goofus. And fuck Goofus's car, too. I had a clue. Someone had videotaped someone air-fucking Earl Thompson's wife. And that had something to do with the murder of Jeff Boot. I was going to find out what. I was going to find out who did it. And I was going to find out fucking why. Please tune in 2 weeks for part 4 of Who Killed Jeff Boot.
Ain't number tootin' fruity, get on the floor if you got that booty.
Get funky. Get funky. Get funky.
Play, 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 play.
Get funky. Get funky.